This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The national championship game is upon us, where Alabama will square off against the Ohio State Buckeyes, and we'll cover it all on this episode of Prospects 101, the show where we break down football prospects from all levels, high school prospects, college transfers, college recruiting, NFL prospects, and the NFL draft. Now, we would not be able to have this podcast without our great partners, Blue Wire Pods and Bet Online. So huge shout out to them. And remember, you can always interact with Prospects 101 on social media at Prospects 101 Pod. And again, that's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Two-man show today as Pastel is in flight. For those that don't know, he's being deployed, but he still may be able to join us every once in a while. But for tonight's a two-man show, Kenny Keller, as always, great for you to always join us. Talk some good college football tonight.
What's up, man? Dude, what a crazy 2020 season that's finally going to wind down to an end. I got to admit, I'm kind of ready for the season just to wrap. I'm ready for the chaos to kind of subside and just let things simmer for a little bit, start getting ready for the draft, and then really open up next season with a fresh slate. But yeah, it's championship week, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're just – you know, anybody who's listened to our podcast the last couple weeks can obviously tell the frustration that comes from all three of us when we're talking about college football, what the season meant, the, you know, potentially what was going on behind closed doors, the bowl season, just all of it just didn't sit right with a lot of us. So I'm with you, Kenny, but I am excited for the national championship game, and we'll talk a lot about that tonight. But before we get to top news, I do have a bone to pick. I don't have a bone to pick with you, but I feel you're going to agree with me on this. And this is what, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that Family Guy, but this is what grinds my gears. You know what grinds my gears? Sports journalism in this for college football in two realms. One, NFL mock drafts that come out are hot trash these days. Even worse, All-American teams. Okay, I'm looking at the AP All-American team, and I'm at the, what's the second one? The AFCA, which is American Football Coaches Association All-American team. Some of these, are you kidding me who's on this list? Like, did you watch any games this year? Right? Like, could you read any more hot take articles online and then come up with your All-American team? Kenny, can you tell me any reason why Derek Stingley should be on an All-American team?
No, not this year, no. I mean, last year, yes, but this year, absolutely not. And I had the same thing with Sean Wade as well.
There we go. You took it right out of my mouth. Sean Wade's on all these All-American teams.
And I'm like, dude, they had to play that guy outside, but he might be a good slot corner. I'm not going to take that away from him. But they played him out on the boundary this year multiple times, and he just got repeatedly cooked. Like, part of the reason they were having secondary issues is because they had to move him from the slot to the boundary, and he's awful on the boundary. If this guy plays the boundary in the NFL, good night. That's going to be terrible. But, yeah, there's some definitely head scratchers, man. I don't get a lot of it, especially Derek Stingley. And you know me, I'm a big big Derek Stingley guy. I see Dylan Moses is on here too.
Oh my gosh, that's the other bone I gotta pick, dude. So in preparation of the show, I brought up my Pro Football Focus account. Let me tell you about Sean Wade. In the draft class of 2021, right? So anybody who was able to go in the NFL in 2021, they had to have played a minimum of 20 snaps, which is 910 snaps or more. Sean Wade played 437. You know where he's ranked amongst all players that are eligible for the draft that played at least 20% of snaps?
Where?
69th.
Ugh.
Had a defensive grade of 662. Run defense a little bit better in the past, but just coverage was at 60. I mean, just garbage. He had a terrible season. And then Dylan Moses, like, I pulled this up too. I think I put guys who are draft eligible, and I think he was like in the 40s or 50s. I mean, it's just like he didn't have a very good season, and then he's on all these lists, and I'm like, what the heck did he do? I see, you know what I see him? I see him lost. I see him, he gets on an offensive lineman and he gets driven like 8 yards behind the line of, or past the line of scrimmage. I don't get it. Like, I feel like journalism used to be better than this. And now and all we do is read all these articles and then we come up with an All-American list based on the articles we read instead of what we see on the field.
Well, what's even worse about this All-American list, this particular one, is the AFCA is the coaches' association. Like, coaches vote on this. So, like, you would think it would be better, but then we sit here and look at the film, and then you see guys on the second team who clearly should be first-teamers. Like, Ahmad Gardner was arguably the best cornerback in all of football this year for Cincinnati. He's on the second team, which that's just G5, just as more G5 disrespect. You've got guys like Patty Fisher on second team behind Dylan Morris. He should definitely be on there. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on and provide more examples of guys. Like Patrick Jones, defensive lineman, not being first team. Him and Rashad Weaver, I don't care if they play for the same team or not. Both of those guys should have been first team All-Americans. Like, it's crazy. I am happy, though, that Teron Jackson is on there. He definitely deserved to be. And then Jaelan Phillips was a no-doubter as well. That guy might – dude, Jaelan Phillips might be the only guy who could give Zaven Collins a run for his money for best defensive player of the year, in my opinion.
Yeah, no kid. No, I'm with you on that. Patrick Surtain, very well deserving. Totally with that on that. All the Alabama players on offense totally get that. All that makes a lot of sense. But like Dylan Moses, so I pulled this up, Pro Football Focus. So same type of things. Guys that are eligible this year and next year had to play 50% of 794 snaps. Now, I'll give this to Dylan Moses. He played a lot of snaps this year, 777 out of the eligible 794, ranked 120th. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
It's just, it's lazy, man. I mean,
it's lazy journalism.
There's nothing that can be said other than it's lazy. I mean, look, I'm the biggest Derek Stingley Jr. fan, and he should be nowhere near an All-America list at all. Not even an honorable mention All-America list.
No,
not even an honorable mention SEC. All SEC teams should even be. I mean, there's no way
you can put an LSU defensive player anywhere near an All-Anything team.
That's ridiculous.
Anyways, all right, I got off my chest. I was just reading that and show prep, and I just couldn't believe what my eyes were seeing. Oh, unbelievable. Anyways, all right, Kenny, let's get into some top news. A lot of top news, actually. And we'll start off with this one, though, because I think we'll go in chronological order here. Let's go Ohio State and Alabama throttle Clemson and Notre Dame in the college football semifinals. That Bama throttling Notre Dame, kind of expected. I didn't think any of us saw OSU completely dominating Clemson in all three phases.
Yeah, I mean, both games pretty much complete blowouts. I think Clemson jumped up early, if I recall, 7-0, and then it was just basically all downhill from there. Ohio State got hot quick. They scored quick. They had a lot of chunk plays. I think I saw something – I think I saw a stat, and I could be quoting it wrong, but I think Justin Fields was 6 of 7 for like 250 yards and three touchdowns of passes over 25 yards or something like that. It was absolutely insane how lethal he was throwing the ball downfield. And then Alabama did what Alabama does. They go in, you know, they handle business as usual against Notre Dame. You know, the score wasn't necessarily a huge blowout, but the game was never close. You and I watched a lot of that game, and it was what it was. They manhandled them from the opening snap. Najee Harris was a beast. Devonta Smith, beast. I mean, you name it, and they just beasted out. I don't think there's anything else I could say about it other than these two teams clearly should be playing for the national championship based on how the semifinals went.
Yeah, very disappointed in Clemson on defense. I thought there were two big things in the game. I think they're one of their starting safeties, kind of a team leader of sorts, was out the first half. You could obviously see how much that impacted, and that was due to I think he got ejected from the ACC championship.
Yeah, it was Nolan Turner. Yep.
Yeah, Nolan Turner. Without Turner's impact in the secondary, you can easily see that Ohio State had that in their playbook, that they wanted to kind of hit them big. Ohio State scored on five straight possessions. So that's kind of incredible if you think of how good the talent on Clemson's defense is. And then, you know, the ejection of Skolaski, or however you pronounce it. I think it's
Skolaski, yeah.
Yeah, Skolaski, yeah. And that one was a tough one to swallow for me personally. I wasn't overly pulling for Clemson, but I am a Clemson fan. When you see something like that happen, as a guy who used to play that position, really bang-bang. Fields was in a mid-spin, kind of an awkward spin. It didn't sit right with me, but the rules are what the rules are, and I think the NCAA is going to have to take a look at that and really kind of redo these rules, these targeting rules, because that second time a guy has been thrown out of a game that had these kind of ramifications due to, in my opinion, football plays that happen to fall under the definition of targeting. So I think they're going to have to take a look at that. But, hey, look, give credit where credit's due. Ohio State played outstanding on the offensive side of the football. They kept the ball out of Clemson's hands. They say, hey, you're going to have to beat us in a shootout tonight, and Clemson couldn't keep up with them. And I think that was the biggest indictment on the Clemson secondary and how much work that they have to do. And mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit on Brent Venables, too. I talked to a lot of people that are big, you know, college football fans, guys that I've coached with. And, you know, he's always kind of got the benefit of the doubt because he's coaching 4 and 5 stars, so he's got athletes out there. So, really, it's easy to do what he wants to do. But when you get in these big games, it's interesting to see how that plays out. Now, to say I think Venable is a really good coach, and he has national championships to show for it. So, but just interesting, kind of an indictment against that Clemson defense that they were not as good as we had thought. And I think there were indications of that earlier in the year when we saw teams like Boston College give them a run for the money. So, you know, we have a national championship set up. You know, whether you like it or not, you know, Alabama's in there against Ohio State, and it'll be a great battle on Monday evening. Next, kind of chronological, what happened, Texas fires Tom Herman and then hires Steve Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator from Alabama. 5 hours later, obviously, unless you live under a rock, you know that they didn't interview him within 5 hours and hire him. This is clearly something that was going behind the scenes. Interesting that it happened so late in the game, Kenny.
Yeah. I wonder what really changed, because obviously they were courting Urban Meyer, and Urban Meyer turned him down. And I forget the other coach they were courting, but they were trying to get someone else to flip to Texas, and they turned him down as well. And it kind of seemed like Herman was safe. You know, he got to coach the bowl game. He won the bowl game, even though I don't think winning a game against Colorado was necessarily going to save him from being on the hot seat next season. It didn't do anything to cool his seat down, but they did win. And then all of a sudden, a couple of days later, we hear, you know, he's fired and Sark is hired. I don't know if maybe Sark, you know, maybe they were sticking on some contract details or what, but yeah, it's definitely interesting. I know what I'm really curious about is if Sark – recruiting's always pretty easy at Texas. But the one thing Texas just hasn't been able to do is develop the 4- and 5-stars who have been coming into the program. That's really the biggest difference. The biggest thing that they need for Texas is a coach who can develop talent. Yep. Because that's what's been lacking since, I don't know, Mac Brown left essentially. Got fired. But, I mean, even before that, he was having issues developing talent as well. They haven't developed talent consistently since 2008, 2009. So, since Colt McCoy was there. That's what's going to be interesting. That's the biggest challenge that Sark needs to pick up is developing talent. Because the talent's there. It's just not being utilized.
Yeah, I think talent, specifically developing defensive talent, I think is going to be his biggest kind of day one thing. You want to get good fast, get good on defense, and get good on special teams, and the offense will eventually come. The hire doesn't surprise me. I guess the way that the process went, I thought was a little interesting for me. The fact that they fire him so far after the bowl game. You know, just tells me that they'd been in discussions with Sark behind the scenes. I wonder how much Herman was surprised by it. But look, Sark's been a head coach at 2 Power 5 schools. One, I would say, is a Tier 2. The other one's a Tier 1. You know, and he wasn't overly successful there. But, you know, Sark was a winner. He inherited a Washington program that was 0-12. And then by the time he had left, he was putting out consistent 8-4 seasons. And he did that a lot by improving the recruiting and improving the talent and improving, obviously, the play on the field. And then, obviously, goes to USC and had his struggles there. But I think this Steve Sarkisian is a little bit different in the sense that he's not the same fiery Sark that we saw at UW and saw at USC. And there's been some articles that have come out about that he's really mellowed out. He's really kind of a different guy. And I wonder if being under Saban has really kind of taught him how to be more of a manager and not necessarily be the fiery leader that he was at UW and USC. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm really curious who he's going to hire to run the defense. I know Will Muschamp turned him down. That doesn't surprise me too much. Hard to go back to a place where you were the coach in waiting and go back and be the defensive coordinator.
Yeah,
so.
No kidding. It will be interesting to see who he picks up. We know he's got a quarterback in place. You know, Casey Thompson came in the second half of that Texas-Colorado game and absolutely just dominated. I think he was 8 of 10 with 4 touchdowns and like 200 yards or something ridiculous like that. So it looks like he's got a good quarterback who will be a third-year junior, you know, coming into the program. He's got a quarterback with some experience. He was a high recruit. He was a 4-star dual threat. So, you know, and then you got another guy named Hudson Card, who's a really, really high recruit, a good quarterback, who's going to be the backup. So, you know, he's got offensive talent there. He's got quarterback talent there. And we know Sark is good with quarterbacks. It's one of the things that attracted Bryce Young and Tua Tagovailoa to Alabama was that Steve Sarkisian was there. So we'll see. You know, it's sink or swim for Sark. This is it. If it don't work out here, I don't know if he's ever going to get another big time P5 shot again. So this is sink or swim time for him. You know, you flame out at USC and then you get fired or flame out of Texas. There's not much room left for you to go up in the upper echelon.
Yeah, and here's what I'll say about Texas, and it's so funny. We were, you know, out and about when that came, and you looked at me, you're like, well, who do you think they're going to hire? And I looked at you and I said, I think Texas sees themselves so far behind Oklahoma and so far behind Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State. I think they try to dip into that well and see if they can't try to find lightning in a bottle to try to catch up, right? They're trying to find the guy who's in those hallways, understands that culture, and can bring that type of culture to Texas. And that's exactly what they did. Just because they are so far behind, in my opinion. I mean, they're not, you know, I don't think it's the talent. I'm not sure if it's the talent thing, but they are behind. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They haven't won a Big 12 championship since, what, 2010? Something like that?
Yeah, it's been,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
been
we're talking
over,
a decade. Close to a
it's
decade.
Been over a decade, yeah.
So I think Texas saw themselves falling very behind. They didn't want the G5 coach. They didn't want, you know, the up-and-coming P5 guy who came from Louisville. They wanted a guy who sat next to Nick Saban for 2 years, knew already how to run a program, and they got their guy. And I agree with you. This is kind of Sark's last moment, sink or swim. So,
yeah.
Hey, everyone. Pastel here. Before we get started in today's pod, I just want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, question and answers with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all of the other listening platforms. And the best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program, it is limited, so get your application today. To apply, go to BlueWireHustle, so that's bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description in the box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Yep. Lastly, some Heisman news. Obviously, if you guys watched the Heisman ceremony last night, Devontae Smith, wide receiver from Alabama, wins the Heisman. He was the odds-on favorite to win. Not a lot. I think what was shocking is that at the beginning of the season, if you had told people that Devontae Smith was going to be the Heisman Trophy winner, a lot of people would have told you that you are absolutely insane. I love this kid, love the makeup. He's just a complete competitor, very quiet, just kind of reserved. But he just goes out there and he balls out, man. I mean, just does nothing but just beat the drums off of corners.
I mean, look, he's the best player on the best team in the country, and I don't even necessarily think it's close. I guess you could probably give some credit to maybe Harris or Jones as being the best player on that team, but Devonta Smith's the best player on the team, and he does it all. He scores and dominates on special teams. He goes out there, and even after Jaylen Waddle gets hurt, continues to put up monster numbers, multiple 200-yard games. I mean, this is a guy everybody knew the football was going to him. It wasn't a surprise. He can run every route that you want him to run. He makes ridiculous plays in the end zone. If you need an example, go look at his touchdown against LSU in the back corner of the end zone. Absolutely incredible. I mean, he's got everything you want, plus he's putting up huge numbers, and he's on the best team in the country. So, you know, the Heisman to me is – generally should be the best player on the best team, and that's who he is. So I think they got it right. I don't really have any gripes. I was surprised to see Trevor Lawrence finish second in the voting. That was pretty interesting because I didn't even have him in my top five ballot. So I thought that was pretty unique, but I mean, I don't hate it. I'm not like, oh my gosh, you know, what a bunch of idiots, but that caught me by surprise.
Do you know what the order was?
It was Smith, Lawrence, Jones, and Trask, I believe. That was the order.
That's interesting because Mac Jones basically went and broke all of Joe Burrow's records, and he ends up third. And Joe Burrow ended up having the widest margin at 91%.
You mean Trask broke all Joe Burrow's records, right?
I'm sorry, Trask, not Mac Jones. Yeah,
he finished fourth. Well, you know, I'm losing four games. Well, unfortunately, when you lose games, man, if you're the only guy I can remember on a team that was like kind of an average team to win the Heisman was Lamar Jackson. I think Louisville was like 8-3 that year or 9-4 going into the Heisman ceremony, but he was so much just unbelievably better than everybody else. So you kind of had no choice but to give it to him. But look, man. The guys who normally win it are on playoff teams. They're on teams that win, but you know, and that's mainly who wins are, you know, people who are going to, you know, back in the day, BCS national title games. So I don't have a problem with it. I think I've always measured it as in like, who's the best player And if that best player is not heads and shoulders above everybody else, a la Lamar Jackson, then who's the best player on the best team? And then if that person doesn't, if there's not really an argument to make, who's the best player on the second team, second best team? And like, that's kind of how I've always looked at it, is I look at who's the best player overall in college football. And if they're not head and shoulders above everybody else, then I start going down the list.
Yeah. Yeah. I get you there. So, again, not too much of a surprise. Devontae Smith, again, was the odd on favorite. Yep. And good to see, a non-quarterback win it. I always like when a non-quarterback or a non-running back wins it.
Yep.
I think that's cool. I think that's kind of what makes it fun.
Me too. I agree.
So good there. So, all right, Kenny, let's get into some national championship talk. And I want to cover some prospects to watch in this national championship game. So why don't you kick it off with four guys that you have your eye on Monday night?
Yeah. So starting off, Patrick Surtain, cornerback out of Alabama, is who I'm going to keep a very close eye on. He's in a heated battle for the top defensive back prospect in the draft. He's a potential top 10 pick. All eyes are going to be on him because Ohio State has some baller receivers. And you're talking about guys like Chris Olave, Julian Fleming, Wilson. I mean, I go on and on. They've got a very deep wide receiver core, and they're facing the second-best quarterback in the country behind Trevor Lawrence in Justin Fields. So Patrick Surtain is going to get tested a ton. And his, you know, I'm not saying it's going to affect his draft stock really one way or the other. Like, I don't think a bad performance is necessarily going to tank his stock. But a great performance could absolutely elevate his stock. So I think I'm going to keep a big eye on him. My next guy is Wyatt Davis, offensive lineman out of Ohio State. He's going up against a very, very tough Alabama front four led by Christian Barmore, defensive tackle, who's probably going to be a first-round pick. So this is a good chance for Davis to kind of get back on draft, you know, the first day draft boards again. He's kind of slid a little bit. He hasn't necessarily had a dominating year like most people expected him to have. He was at one point, if you remember, Pastel, our co-host, had projected him as a top 10 pick in our first mock draft, which I thought was a little crazy considering he's an interior lineman. I think drafting an interior lineman in the top 10 is a little nutty. But
also, he was a part-timer last year too. So.
Yeah. That just goes to show you how far his draft stock has fallen, because right now he's not considered a day one pick. He's considered an early day two pick. But a great performance against a very tough defensive line and a very good Christian Barmore could pay big dividends leading up to the draft come April for him. My next guy is Chris Olave. For the opposite reason of why I'm excited to watch Patrick Surtain is why I'm excited to watch Chris Olave. I got to admit, wide receiver from Ohio State. I have to admit, I was wrong on this guy. I was not a huge fan of his coming into this season. I thought he was kind of an overrated prospect. I didn't think he really did anything special. But the more I watch him play, Gless, he is such a perfect route runner. This guy does not make sloppy routes. He does not run sloppy routes. He's unbelievable. And you could tell when he's in the zone, when he's playing well, that whole offense just clicks. Because look at the difference when he was out against Northwestern in the Big Ten championship game, and then look to a couple weeks later playing Clemson in the semifinal game, and him and Justin Fields just had a field day against that Clemson secondary. Like, I think you could just tell Justin Fields is a lot more comfortable when Olave is on the field. And I'm really excited to see what he can do against elite-level competition. He's going to be probably matched up all game long with Patrick Surtain. And if he can eat, if he can cook, it's really going to help his draft stock in a very, very crowded wide receiver class this year. And then my last guy is Najee Harris, running back out of Bama. He went out there and dominated Notre Dame last week. I mean, he made some jaw-dropping runs. He leaped over a guy, you know, made a couple spin moves, broke some tackles. He just runs so gracefully, but with power. Like, it's quiet power. And I'm really excited to see what he could do against – you know, pretty solid Ohio State defense who shut down Trevor Etienne last week. They made them one-dimensional. They took away the run and made Clemson try and air it out, and they got up quick, and it just rolled downhill all from there. So I'm excited to see what he can do against another top-level defense. I was very, very impressed with the way he played against, which I would consider a top-five defense in Notre Dame last week. So I'm really excited to see Najee Harris square off and see what kind of impact he can make against this pretty stout Ohio State defense.
Love Najee Harris. I think he keeps up going on my draft board the more I watch him. I think he has improved even more this season, not only the way he's been able to pass catch and pass protect, but the way he's been able to run the rock. So I like Najee Harris a lot, man. Go ahead.
Is it crazy to think that I'm kind of flirting with making him my number one running back on my draft board this year, this offseason?
I don't think it's crazy at all. To me, if you're an NFL GM, what is there not to like about Najee Harris? He can do it all. Like he can catch passes, he can pass protect, he can run in the tackles. He's got enough speed in the open field, and he's a bigger guy, so we believe that he's going to be durable. So I personally think that Najee Harris is going to be my number one running back. I love Etienne, but just the more I watch Harris, the more and more I like him, man.
I agree. I'm with you.
So, all right, let me get into my four. First one's Mac Jones. Love this kid. He's shown such great moxie all season. Great player. Decent arm, but for the most part, he's just extremely accurate. I mean, he places pinpoint accuracy on all of his passes. He's able to find the open guy. His completion percentage is just through the roof. He does exactly what that offense requires him to do, and to be quite honest with you, may make him one of the first six quarterbacks taken if he chooses to go into the NFL draft and not come back to Alabama. I think he's going to give Ohio State all they can handle because of how accurate of a passer he is. So really looking forward to see what he can do against that Ohio State defense. Sean Wade, we talked about him a little bit earlier. Really a disappointing 2020 campaign and a prospect that really needs to show up big when the lights are biggest in the national championship game. There's no doubt about it. If he can have an outstanding game against a daunted Alabama receiving core, I think that he starts to gain a lot more favor in the eyes of scouts and show that, hey, I can play a boundary side corner. I can be a press defender. So I think he has a lot to prove. So I'm really looking to watch him on Monday night against that, again, scary Alabama receiving core. And to be honest with you, I don't know if they match up Sean Wade against DeVonta Smith. I think they try to throw some different looks.
Well, here's what I'm curious is if they put DeVonta in the slot and make Wade cover him, because that's where Wade plays. Wade plays a lot out of the slot. So if Waddle comes back, maybe they line Waddle and Mechie up with the X and the Z, or sorry, the X and the Y, and then play DeVonta at the Z.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think they're going to move those guys around so well, though, whether he's an outside guy, an inside guy. They move them around. They do a really good job. Sark does a great job doing that. Next guy, Alex Leatherwood. This guy was really high on my draft board at the start of the season. He hasn't had a bad season, but he hasn't had a great season either. Pro Football Focus overall had him at a 79.4. Looks like that's best for 20. I did it by pass blocking, but you look at his run blocking, pretty good run blocker, probably one of the best in college football. I wouldn't say he's a first-round draft pick, but he's borderline. I think you could see him go late first, but it also depends on how many teams need left tackles. The one thing I like about Alex is that he's very versatile. He's played the guard position. He's played right tackle. So I think NFL scouts are going to love him. But, hey, this is going to be maybe the best defensive front you see all season. So I like to see him have a huge game at left tackle, open up a lot of holes, and really protect Mac Jones's blind side in order to give him enough time to find DeVonta Smith down the field. Last guy, Christian Barmore. Again, no doubt about it, this guy has had an absolutely dynamic season. He was the third highest-ranked defensive tackle on Pro Football Focus, and really only lost out by 0.4 points, so easily could have been the number one interior defensive player. A complete force. He's dominant. I love his pass rush ability. And I think what you're going to see from him is his ability to collapse the pocket on Justin Fields to try to make him uncomfortable. So looking forward to see what Christian Barmar can do against that offensive front, specifically led by Wyatt Davis for Ohio State. So, Kimmy, those are the four guys that I'm really interested in. Is there anybody that I mentioned or maybe somebody I didn't mention that you're looking forward to see?
You know, not really. I'm kind of curious as to see what Garrett Wilson does as the second wide receiver. He's not really draft eligible, so I don't want to put him as a prospect to watch, but I'm a big fan of Wilson. I think he's going to be a first-round pick when he's eligible out of Ohio State, wide receiver. So I'm really excited about him. But I don't know, man. I feel like these eight guys we mentioned are pretty much the blue-chip prospects everybody needs to watch. You know, these guys are going to be probably the eight highest drafted players on the field, you know, except for maybe the center out of Alabama, but he's got a busted knee and he's not playing, so it's kind of irrelevant. But I think these are the guys. These are the eight guys we all need to watch and pay attention to in this game, because all eight of those guys are going to be playing on Sunday next year, and all eight of these guys are most likely going to go within the first 2 days of the draft.
Yep, no doubt about it. All right, Kenny, let's get into some fatties. Let's get into our national championship wagers presented by our great sponsors, Bet Online. Kenny, give us three great bets that you can place on the national championship game on Monday.
Yeah, these three I took today, this morning, Wednesday morning. So this was before recording. This was about 12 hours ago. Ohio State versus Bama, obviously, is a national championship matchup. Bama is favored by 7.5 points. I took Bama and the points. I took the over 75. I think it's going to be a pretty high-scoring game. And I took as a prop bet that there will be a defensive or special teams touchdown plus 150. Felt like that was pretty safe. Both teams have electric punt returners. Obviously, Devonta Smith for Alabama. So he's a threat to score anytime he touches the ball. I feel pretty confident that at some point there's going to be defensive or special teams touchdown. And to be honest, it might be the difference in the game. Who knows?
That's true.
Yep, for sure. All right, I've got four. I'm going to copy your first two because I think they're no-brainers, to be honest with you. Bama, a minus 7.5. I'm going to take that. And I'm going to go the over 75 as well. I think that those are really good. I've got two prop bets that I think are really good. So hear me out on this first one. First score of the game, Ohio State field goal get plus 800. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Ohio State knows they're going to have to score a lot of points, and they want to put it on the board first. So they're going to win the toss. They're going to take the ball. They're going to go down, and they're going to kick a field goal because they'll get stopped. Alabama will be good enough to hold them to a field goal. It'll be like a third and five, and it'll be a drop pass. So I think that at plus 800 is definitely worth a decent play. Yeah. And then I have margin by the end of the first half, Alabama 1 to 6 points. That was plus 600. I thought that one was also a no-brainer to take because I think this game's going to be really close, probably up to half. I think this championship game to me is going to mirror last year's championship game. I equate Alabama to being really close to what LSU was last year. And I think Ohio State, to me, reminds me a lot of Clemson last year, right? I think Alabama is just the better team. But I think that Ohio State's going to lay around, and I think they're going to make it a really close first half. Bama goes in into the half, maybe up a field goal. And then in the second half, I think that they score a couple big drives, a couple big plays, and they end up putting it away. But I think that Alabama, 1 to 6 points, the margin by the end of the first half at plus 600, I think that that's a decent play if you want to make some decent cash.
I like it. I mean, both of those are good odds, your Ohio State field goal and your Bama 1 to 6. I mean, you know, the expected value on them, plus 800, plus 600, I think are definitely worth throwing a little bit of cash on, and would not be surprised at all if either one of those hits. Those are good pool. Those are good props. I might have to take you up on those and play them.
There you go. That's all Gless does on this podcast, just throw fatties. I just make people money. That's what happens. All right, Kenny, let's wouldn't be Prospects 101 if we didn't cover a little bit of recruiting and prospect news. So I think the biggest thing that has come out in the last week which I was excited for being a Pac-12 fan. Corey Foreman, the number one prospect in the country, according to 24/7 Sports, ended up staying at home and committing to USC. So really happy to see that. Kenny, what's kind of your instant reaction, and what do you think impact that has on the rest of recruiting?
Well, it's great for USC. It's great for the Pac-12, because up to this point, we talked about this on other podcasts, that they'd only had one five-star recruit, and that was your boy over at Washington, Heward, who was a legacy. So USC lands the number one overall recruit in Corey Foreman. They're able to keep him home, which is a big deal. We always talk about putting a fence around your backyard. This guy's from Corona, California. So it's a big deal for USC to keep him home. You know, and they were getting – I mean, they beat the big dogs for him. They beat Clemson. They beat Alabama. They beat Ohio State for him. I think that's a huge deal. I see a lot of comparisons of him, of Cameron Jordan. A guy who's going to – you know, Cameron Jordan's a stud. He was a stud in college. He's been a stud in the NFL. This guy is 6'4", 265 pounds. He's already got an NFL body. Reminds me a lot of Kayvon Thibodeau, but I think he's better. And we all saw what impact Kayvon Thibodeau has already had for Oregon. I mean, this is just good for everybody, Gless. You know, this is a breakaway from the cartel of power. We talked about that the other day on another podcast. USC is a big team, obviously, but they haven't been playing like a big team. You know, hopefully this guy can come in and inject some life into USC, and maybe we'll start to see another team get in the playoff picture. You'll see a team in the Pac-12 that can run with other big teams and other conferences. I think USC can. I think you and I talked about this offline the other day. The skill players at USC are there. It's the interior line they've always had trouble with. I think you were talking about a coach. You were talking to the other day. Gless said that the skill players there are all NFL players.
Yeah.
But the inside, the interior guys are a bunch of, like, you know, pillow fighters. So someone like Corey Foreman comes in there and starts putting some respect on that defense, and all of a sudden USC could be a team to reckon with.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think what it does is it helps the Pac-12 and their reputation so much, right? I think you hit the nail on the head. Look, a lot of the biggest players, five stars, the last couple of years, you know, especially at the quarterback position, have basically spurned the West Coast and they've gone east, right? Just look last year and DJ Uiagalelei, you know, going to Clemson, and Bryce Young mm-hmm. going to Alabama. But, you know, these big teams, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, I mean, they've been slowly picking these five stars off the West Coast, and a lot of those guys haven't been staying at home. So I liked seeing that, because I would like somebody in the West Coast to make the Pac-12 really relevant again in the national conversation. Actually, I'm going to revamp my statement there. I would like to see anybody on the West Coast besides Oregon make the Pac-12 relevant again. So, you know, and good to see Corey Foreman go home. I'd like to see this trend continue with JT Tiamalu. I would love to see him commit to the Huskies. I think he's coming out in late January, early February. He's going to sign on actual signing day, and that's right. What he'll choose. And, again, that's between Ohio State, Washington, Oregon, USC, and Alabama. But good thing to note, he has yet to visit Ohio State or Alabama. So if that says anything, but that's just what it is at this point.
Your boy Sam Heward needs to organize like a Washington recruit day, like they did a Washington summit, and get that guy to sign, man. Because if he signs with Ohio State, I'm going to be so bummed about that. If he signs with Ohio State, Bama, Clemson, he signs with any of those three, or Georgia, I'm going to be so bummed, because it's the same top four. Like, come on, man. Let's get some new blood in there, Gless. I don't know. Call your dad up. Maybe he could arrange, you know, be a bag man or something. Let's go. You got ties out there. Make it happen.
That's right. Well, I think it's interesting for him. He could also – it'll be interesting to see wherever he commits, where they put him, right? Yeah. So a lot of people think he's just going to be a defensive tackle, defensive end. I'm not so sure. I think he could be a tight end and be a Kyle Pitts-like player. Right, I mean, he's an All-State basketball player. He's got Division I basketball offer. I mean, he's that kind of athlete. Great ball skills, great everything. So it'll be interesting to see where a team plays him. I think all the teams are recruiting him as a defensive player, but don't be surprised to see him a year or two from now being moved over to the offensive side of the ball.
You'd be tight if he played Iron Man football and played tight end and defensive end.
Hey, man.
That'd be sick.
You won't hear anything from me on that. So.
That'd
all
be
right,
sick.
Second recruiting update, Deion Sanders continues to crush it on the recruiting trail, has gotten a couple SEC transfer portal guys. But, Kenny, tell us about the four-star receiver that he flipped this week.
Yeah, Trevante Rucker out of Vanguard, Florida, was originally committed. What, crystal balls on 24/7, all had 10 out of 10 locks to Florida. That's where he was committed, and then Jackson State flips him earlier this week to bring in there. I'm going to repeat this for you because this is a FCS program. To bring in their sixth four-star transfer or recruit in this signing class, in this 2021 class. Shadier Sanders, Trevante Rucker, Dejon Warren, Kionis Miller, Abdul Malik McLean, and Isaiah Bolden. Now, those last three, Miller transferred from Auburn, McLean transfers from USC, and Bolden transfers from FSU. And then not only that, the Rucker was flipped from Florida, and I believe Warren, who came from Lackawanna Community College, flipped from being a Georgia commit to a Jackson State commit. So he's absolutely doing work right now. If you look at their all-time recruits, he literally already has – the top eight recruits ever in Jackson State history. They're all from this class. So the SWAC better be ready next year because I believe Deion's going to have these boys ready to play, man. They're going to have a bunch of dudes, a bunch of athletes, just that the FCS has not seen in the SWAC in a long, long time. I mean, you're talking, he's building a roster that's starting to rival JMU and North Dakota State for the type of talent they're bringing in. And Gless, I don't even know if JMU – in North Dakota State can claim in at least one class that they brought in 6 4-star players. They don't do that. They're just bringing in a bunch of 3-star and maybe the occasional 4 who transfers in the transfer portal, but not 6. So if he keeps this up and they keep winning, Jackson State could turn into a monster in the FCS level very, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And I got to say, this is looking more and more like it's a home run hire, at least from the recruiting standpoint as of right now.
Like we said, Kenny, we're going to say 5 years from now, this is either the smartest hire in the history of football, or, man, we're going to talk about Jackson State, how they don't have a football program anymore.
Yeah, because they're just paying dudes left and right. And, like, I know that sounds super cynical and very unfair. Well, you know, we're not. I don't want to make it sound like we're insinuating that, but you just don't see this on the FCS level.
Like, this is very rare. Very rare.
6 4-star recruits. Now, granted, one's his son. I get that. That's fine. But 6 4-star recruits are now coming into that program. Dude, this is a better recruiting class than, like, a majority of FBS teams. Like, I don't know how – I would
better than UW. Better than UW. We have, like, 3 4-stars.
I should have looked and seen how many teams, FBS teams, actually had more than six or more 4-star recruits. I can't imagine. I know it's better than Wake Forest. I know it's better than Virginia Tech. I know it's better than UVA, I believe. Like, those are ACC teams. So, I mean, you're talking – they're recruiting at an elite level right now. It's incredible.
Your Virginia Tech dig is just fantastic.
Well, I threw Wake Forest in there as well. I mean, Wake Forest has the worst recruiting class in ACC, but that's expected. Like, we do that. Us and Duke battle for last and next to last in recruiting every year in the ACC. I just think it's funny that Virginia Tech's kind of hanging down in the slums with us.
Hilarious. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and get out of here for the evening. But as always, you can follow Prospects 101 on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Prospects101Pod. Please make sure that you subscribe to Prospects 101 on your favorite podcast platform. Make sure that you stay up to date with the show as we release them. And I got to say, Kenny, it is kind of sad. This is going to be our last real college football show. Right, everything from now on will be NFL draft related. We're going to talk We're going to talk mock drafts. We're going to talk scouting combine. We're going to talk everything leading up to the NFL draft in, I believe it's in April again this year.
Yep. Yep.
So
yeah, this is pretty much the last like college football centric show. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the national championship on our next show, but yeah, starting from after this episode, we're pretty much going to be full gear till April on the NFL draft prospects, mock drafts, scouting reports, film breakdown. Like that's where we're at now for the next couple months.
And we still got some big high school football news coming out too, man. Like signing day on the 2nd.
Yep.
Still some big fish out there. And I think I can speak for true college football fans who would like to see the talent dispersed a little bit, that we hope that those guys go somewhere else and not to the same place. Please,
I agree.
Please do it. Please. That's all I ask.
But break up the cartel.
Break up the cartel. For Kenny, I'm Glass. We'll talk to you next week and enjoy the national championship game.